This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Mike Danger.
You know what I've been doing, Gino?
What's going on, man? Hear me okay?
I've been introducing my family to The Last Dance. Have you done likewise?
No, the executive producer has sat in, but she's falling asleep there by the time you get to the second hour on Sunday nights.
And blasphemy.
You know, and the kids have no interest. I mean, the analogy, who would this be like? It'd be like, who would be before our time that we heard about? Probably like Mickey Mantle or Joe DiMaggio or some figure like that.
I don't know that those guys had the kind of impact culturally that Jordan had. I don't know that you can make any comparison to what Jordan was, what Jordan means. And, you know, look, maybe I'm more than just coaxing them into watching it. Like, I you know, I've said, hey, it's kind of interesting. And you like those shoes that you wear, that you ask for every year for Christmas. Well, there's a reason why they're as popular as they are. And that reason is number 23.
But you've indoctrinated your daughters into Chicago sports. I mean, you brought your daughter to the Stanley Cup Final. You've been to a Cubs game, so this is part of who you are, though, right? I would say, hey, you're a Chicago guy. Hey, kids, let's learn about the number 23 here.
It is interesting. My executive producer, the general manager of my house, plays along nicely, but I can just tell she's disgusted by the antics of one Dennis Rodman. She wants nothing to do with what he is doing during that 1998 season.
Isn't that great? You know you have talent when you can just do whatever you want and then show up. There's no discipline. Like, yeah, it was a distraction for everybody else except the Bulls. Like, there's Dennis doing his thing, being a wrestler here, making money in the NBA finals. Can you imagine something like that today?
You are in the sports bar after hours. We appreciate you listening wherever you may be enjoying podcasts, whether it's here at ESPNRochester.com, through the radio.com app, or wherever you enjoy podcasts. I am Mike Danger. He is Gene Battaglia. And while The Last Dance wraps up and you talk about, wouldn't it be something to have that kind of immense talent where you could screw up and it doesn't matter. You know you're still going to win. Hey, isn't that kind of the secret wish and hope for all Buffalo Bills fans after this weekend? I mean, this was not a banner weekend for the Buffalo Bills and some of their talent.
Yeah, so Ed Oliver arrested, charged with driving while intoxicated, but then he also had a firearm in the car registered, but because at the time he's allegedly committing a crime, then you tack on another charge. So in the end, it's two misdemeanors in the state of Texas he is going to be facing here. And we, of course, have to let everything kind of play out, but you know, there are question marks up and down this defensive line for Buffalo. And Ed Oliver, going into the second year, Ed Oliver is the player you're hoping that the Buffalo Bills, just like how Josh Allen on the other side, you took this guy in the top 10. So year number two, and it was an up and down rookie season for Ed Oliver. But at the end of the season, he started to come around. Year number two, more expectation. And you know, maybe in a backwards way, this will have him on his best behavior. But this story from over the weekend, certainly not good news. And the Bills are not immune to these stories that happen throughout the league.
No, the Bills aren't immune to it. And you hear about other off-field incidents in the NFL with other teams consistently, year in and year out. What makes this different for me, Gino, is the times that we are living in right now, the ultra-sensitive world that we are living in right now, where not wearing a face mask in public could make you the you know, put you in the eye of the storm in terms of the ridicule and you know, what kind of ramifications you could face for just doing something as innocuous as that, you know, grabbing an extra piece of produce and then putting it back before you put it in your shopping cart, you know, could be looked at with a stink eye. What Ed Oliver did in the world that we're living in right now is under a microscope, it looks even bigger than what it actually would look like in normal times. It makes me nervous, Gene, and it's a bigger overarching theme, not just focused on just one Ed Oliver, but any professional athlete now in the world that we're living in that gets themselves into any kind of trouble. It makes me worry that fans are going to stop being fans because of it's an ongoing theme. It's nothing new. We've always heard fans sport. These athletes are entitled. They play by a different set of rules. They've been told how special they are their whole life, so they can get away with whatever they want to get. They feel like they can do whatever they want to do. We've heard that for years and years and years. But now, in the middle of a pandemic, when everybody is trying to look out for everybody else's best interests at all times, the idea that you're hammered behind the wheel of a car driving recklessly with a beer between your legs and a firearm in your car, under the microscope, that looks like a massive, massive, massive misstep.
I'm going to let I know it's not popular, but let's just let this play out here. But it's also today, it's also current. I mean, you know, quick story time. You don't have to go back that far, but there was a defensive tackle on the team called Marcel Darius, and Marcel Darius was with a teammate, and they were driving at ridiculous speeds in Buffalo, during one off season. That teammate's Jerry Hughes. Okay, so like, yes, not all these guys on this team have great squeaky clean records. Okay, but we don't talk about Jerry Hughes because that happened back in, I forget, 2013, 2014, somewhere around there. But Jerry Hughes is still here, but we don't talk about that now because it's not front and center with us. What makes us disappointing is just the fact that the Bills invested so highly in Ed Oliver. And what may end up happening? Who knows? I mean, by the time we get around to the season, this might all be forgotten about, believe it or not. Or maybe the system, the legal system, takes its time. We've seen other cases like this, Danger, where it will get pushed off until the next year, and then all of a sudden, ta-da, two-game suspension for Ed Oliver. And that's kind of what you should brace for as a Bills fan, that whether it's this year or next year, by kind of other things that have happened in the league, Ed Oliver probably precedent would be a two-game suspension here.
The biggest thing you hope happens from this is that Ed Oliver learns from this mistake and doesn't make this kind of mistake again in the future. You hope that you have a support system around Ed Oliver that can make him realize the stupidity of his actions. And then, yes, it becomes a distant memory, much like the Jerry Hughes incident became a distant memory. Because, listen, Ed Oliver is 22 years old. He's a knucklehead. He's still going to make childish mistakes and probably still has some of that entitlement and the belief that he is indestructible as a 22-year-old. I felt that way when I was 22. I don't know about you, Gino, but I made plenty of foolish mistakes at that age as well. So I want to give a little bit of leeway, but there is a different sort of responsibility to a professional athlete, one that was taken at such a degree of fanfare as Ed Oliver was in that first round of the NFL draft just a couple of seasons ago. The idea that he learns from this mistake and it doesn't happen again, you know, the worst thing that could possibly happen is this is a bad pattern of bad behavior for Ed Oliver. And I don't know that it necessarily is. Everything we've known about Ed Oliver to this point in his time in Buffalo is he's a pretty solid guy. His name is that of an insurance salesman. So, I mean, he can't get too far off the beaten path and get into too much trouble.
Yeah, and you know, to your point about Ed Oliver and what does this mean? Can you win in today's NFL with 53 process guys or whatever they're going to raise the roster to. In other words, can you have all third round guys like Harrison Phillips who are giving you A-plus effort? But the answer is no. No, you need talent. So this is always going to be the age-old question. Can you have a roster with just guys on there that you would want dating your daughter? And I'm not saying that you wouldn't want that. Don't put, you know, words in my mouth. I'm not saying that about Ed Oliver, but I'm just saying that you wouldn't want your child getting arrested for DWI. Can we agree on that? Yeah. So to me, that's the age-old question. This is a violent sport, and sometimes the players that rise at the top have these behavioral tendencies. Look at any Super Bowl champion. We didn't even tackle Sammy Watkins. You know, what planet is that guy on? He's not a criminal, but I mean, yeah, you get all sorts of different characters in an NFL locker room. So to me, I'm going to give Ed Oliver the benefit of the doubt, but you don't get another chance here as far as, you know, you can't afford another misstep here.
Yeah. I just hope that, you know, whereas in the past this has happened at a time where there isn't any action to talk about or any OTAs for us to discuss, and there are no other distractions right now, this gets magnified and it's something that we remember. Now, that being said, I don't want the action of one Ed Oliver to make me believe that everybody in the Buffalo Bills or everybody in the NFL is a troublemaker. There's a lot of players in the NFL, and they're not all going to be choir boys. A lot of them are going to make mistakes. Some of them will get into trouble with the law. It's just the way it's always been. And for the most part, professional athletes are decent. They're not going to get themselves in any kind of trouble. They may be wired differently than us mere mortals, but that's not always a bad thing. Ed Oliver needs to learn from this mistake, and the Buffalo Bills can ill afford to have somebody that they've invested so heavily in missing games this early in his career because of his off-field transgressions.
Are we really comfortable with the Bills' defensive line here? I mean, I've read stories, heard conversations. Wow. This defensive line is really, really deep. But I just look up and down now, and, you know, we could put the question mark next to Ed Oliver because he might miss some time here. Trent Murphy, okay? Trent Murphy is a prime candidate to get cut because you could save $8 million roughly on the cap. Jerry Hughes, opening day is going to be 32. Lotulelei? Okay, Lotulelei, a divisive figure, okay? Doesn't put up the stats. We're told we don't know football if we don't understand what he does for a team. And everybody else behind him, well, they're all backups in this league. And if you're hanging your hat that A.J. Epineza is going to come in and have double-digit sacks right away, I'm sorry. I mean, if the Buffalo Bills were really going to make a run for it and say, this is the year, a guy named Jadeveon Clowney's out there. The Bills do have cap space, but I don't see the Bills going out and making that investment because they're going to look at all these guys on this team right now. I'm going to include Ed Oliver here, and they're all B pluses to C minuses, and you could feel the defensive line that will be okay, but is it really going to strike the fear of God into any opposing offensive coordinator? I don't think so.
Excuse me. Well, it all goes back to the system, right? I mean, you have a bunch of guys, as you mentioned, that might be B pluses, but they're B pluses who understand and execute a system to perfection. And I don't know that the Buffalo Bills will be flashy in terms of sacks generated or tackles for loss or interceptions even. I don't know that that's going to be there. I mean, if they want to be considered elite, then yeah, takeaways is something that they should excel at. And it's something that if you're teaching this defense the right way, you're going after the football every chance. I mean, Pina Tillman was a part of Sean McDermott's defense in Carolina for a little bit. They know how to get after the football, and you see it in the secondary. And I think if everybody does what they're supposed to do and they follow their assignment and they do their job on the defensive side of the ball, you might be able to get by and be a better than average defense with B-plus talent, because the idea of a flashy kind of Jadeveon Clowney kind of player that you know is going to get after the quarterback when he's out there, I don't know that the Bills have that or will have that going into the season. They didn't have it last year, and they were still able to put out a pretty decent defense through the course of the season.
What do we think of Edmonds at middle linebacker? Because I view this defense that
you know, we talk about the secondary being the backbone, but if you funnel everything going to him, at some point, he's still a kid, Danger. He's younger than Joe Burrow. I mean, he's a man child. When we saw him out at camp, he does not look like a middle linebacker. He looks like a defensive end. So to me, that's, you know, if I'm going to offer some optimism, if Tremaine Edmonds can make that jump to be the dominant player the Bills hope he can, then everything else kind of looks better on this Bills defense.
Yeah, and I think that's what you knew you were going to get out of Tremaine Edmonds when you drafted him. What was he, 19 when they drafted him? I mean, he is a kid, and, you know, he's a monster. And if he improves, as you would expect he would going into his third season now, he becomes the leader of that defense. And we might be thinking of guys like Trey White as the leader of the Bills defense, or guys like Starr on the line, or Jerry Hughes as the leaders. And from a veteran standpoint, it probably still is Hughes. But Tremaine Edmonds has that opportunity in the center of the defense in year three to be the unquestioned quarterback of that Buffalo Bills defense. I think that's what we're all expecting to happen in year three.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So, you know, the news out of Buffalo today is that they're kind of joining us here in the, I didn't know Rochester was Finger Lakes. I always thought of us as Western. We have an identity crisis here, Danger, but I guess they are opening up in Buffalo, but that does not mean the Buffalo Bills are opening up, and you might have to wait until June until you get the whole band out there and get some sort of form of mini camp here put together on the fly. So the Bills facility, not open, where you may have, pretty soon here, NFL teams around the league, players reporting to their facilities, but because of where we are, that's not going to be the case, at least not this week here in Buffalo.
All right, Gino, what else you got on the docket for this evening here in the sports bar after hours?
Listen, I want to go back to Jordan here for a second. He's a control freak, okay? If there's they left out a whole major storyline. If you want to know what makes Michael Jordan tick, if he has any regrets, how come we didn't hear from his ex-wife in this? Now, you could say that Juanita didn't want to be a part of it, and that's fine. Michael Jordan could say, hey, you know what? I got divorced. That's personal, and I don't want to go into that. That's fine. But you got to address that. You cannot have, you know, personal figures from the security guys to the mother to his children. Okay, he put his own children in this documentary, but he didn't put the mother of his children. And if I want to know a little bit more about what makes Michael Jordan tick, I don't need to know the sort of details as to why their marriage broke up. Okay, that's National Enquirer stuff. But to me, that was a storyline that they left out. And if you're putting this documentary together, yeah, in order to get Michael Jordan on camera, there's give and take, and I'm sure Jordan's like, I don't want any part of that, but you at least have to address it, that this man who had success in everything in his life, well, you know, one important thing in his life did not have success. I would have liked at least to ask the question, what happened there?
Well, I wonder if it was her that said she didn't want to be a part of the documentary, that in some way she may resent what happened and how it all went down, because with all of that professional success that he had, I'm sure it took a toll on their marriage. It has to take a toll on their marriage. And what was the thing that drove them apart eventually, you know, leading to their divorce? You know, hearing that Michael Jordan had three kids with Juanita, and now his twin girls, I believe 6 years old, with his current wife. Hey, you know what? The guy isn't perfect. And he says it in the documentary. If I could do it over again, I wouldn't want to be viewed as a role model. I mean, it's an impossible task. You're eventually going to be picked apart for having flaws. And if you're the kind of competitor that he is, those are the things that drive you insane. I actually thought from last night's episodes, there was another storyline that I found completely compelling that nobody talks about, that nobody questions, and that nobody's done any more investigating into. And you could do a whole separate documentary on this topic alone if you really wanted to. Gino, five guys delivering one pizza to Michael Jordan in Salt Lake City. That's not suspicious. And he still goes ahead and eats the pizza. Okay, couple of questions. One, it's 10:30. I know that Salt Lake City ain't like Vegas. It ain't a party town. But if you're telling me there's only one pizza joint open at 10:30 in Salt Lake City, that's your only option, and you're ordering from them, and they show up with five guys to deliver one pizza, and you decide to go ahead and eat that pizza anyway, I'm suspicious of all of it, Gino. I don't know what to believe anymore.
You're Michael Jordan. You're the team security. You go down to that pizzeria. You walk into the kitchen, and you watch the guy make the darn pizza. And it's like five guys show up like, hey, I bought somebody to eat. I'll just eat a slice here. Yeah, it always kind of was weird that flu game been part of the folklore. But if you had food poisoning, I don't know how the guy did it.
Personally. Yeah, and think about that, Gino. I mean, like, Gino, think about through the course of the documentary. Don't you get the sense that Jordan, yes, just a competitor to a fault, but also a guy that just wanted moments of normalcy, you know, a guy that valued his time alone where he wasn't being bothered or asked for something. That you know, when he had the chance to go out and play golf, he loved going out to play golf. He loved his moments alone where he wasn't in the spotlight and valued those moments. Like, I think for Michael Jordan, ordering a pizza is about as normal as anybody can get, and looked for that opportunity to just have something delivered. No room service at the hotel? What are we talking about in Salt Lake City? What's going on? I mean, do they have to churn the butter before they can make
the bowls? You hire a chef, for crying out loud. I got a couple other observations I want to throw at you. So the Bulls win the sixth championship. You see Jordan playing on the piano. Did you notice he was still in uniform? He was still in uniform. Like they all wanted to get the heck out of there. And they kind of grazed this. And I'm like, aha, they're going to dive into this. Where they talked about Jordan. Oh, we don't want him going to Salt Lake City. We don't like that crowd. And immediately, I thought of the Westbrook story. And remember that from last year where there was some, you know, bad accusations about, you know, fans being racial and everything. I thought that was where they were going to go. But for that team, you see them sitting in the locker room, they just look exhausted. They're sitting there, everybody's got their bottle in their hand, and they just get on the bus. And they cannot wait to get out of there that he still has his uniform on. The other thing, too, I want to kind of bring up, and this will be my take here, okay, that in the beginning of this docuseries, they made Jerry Krause out to be the villain. And Jerry Krause, he's just not a likable guy. And of course, they piled on him. But I would ask you this. If Jerry Krause, or if LeBron James had a real GM in Cleveland that was able to bring in a talent like Scottie Pippen and assemble a whole roster around him, maybe LeBron doesn't leave Cleveland the first time. So Jerry Krause, where he just wanted so much of the credit, he wasn't here to defend himself here. So I'm actually going to go out there and say Jerry Krause actually deserves a lot more credit than people are giving him for putting this dynasty all together. And if somebody like LeBron had a GM that was able to fortify a roster around him, I mean, LeBron's roster first time in Cleveland, good golly, had nothing, doing it all on his own. That's why he tapped out and said, I'm out of here. I got to do this a different way. And we vilified LeBron for that heading to Miami. But to me, that was what was missing. And can you imagine just LeBron watching this whole thing and he can't do anything about it? He's in quarantine. He's got a Laker team that who knows where they would have gone to in the finals this year. So we just wanted to bring up that point that let's not pile on the late Jerry Krause.
Sure. I got a couple of thoughts on that. First on LeBron. LeBron, the difference between, I think, Jordan and LeBron is people knew that if they played with Jordan, they would immediately be better. People think if you play with LeBron, it's a matter of time before this guy tries to ship me out of this team because it's just been his MO. I mean, like, I feel like LeBron doesn't necessarily elevate the play of those around him. It's all about LeBron. Whereas Jordan, you could tell he might have been a dick and he might have been a bully, but he got the most out of everybody. And there was a different system in play there as well in terms of how guys mentored other guys. You all wanted to emulate and live up to Jordan, and he would hold you to a higher standard. But I thought it was very interesting to hear Steve Kerr talk about how John Paxson kind of mentored him into this role and let him know, hey, this is what Michael is going to expect out of you in these moments. Be ready for it, and you will be just fine with Michael Jordan. And Steve Kerr and Michael Jordan, famously from earlier in the docuseries, you know, got into it because there was probably a lack of trust there. Well, that lack of trust disappeared as their relationship and their time together as teammates went on. Jerry Krause is always going to be public enemy number one in the city of Chicago. There's nothing that anybody can say or do that's going to make them think otherwise, because everybody that followed that team, and you saw it again last night, knew they could have won another one. He was still at the peak of his game. He was the MVP of the 1998 All-Star game, and he won the championship in six in Utah against the best team in the league that year. He could have very easily given it another run for a seventh championship, but Krause was the one who said before the season, it doesn't matter if Phil goes 82-0, we aren't having him back as our head coach, knowing that Michael had a line in the sand. It was Krause who was so determined to, you know, rebuild and create another team that he could build as part of his legacy. It was a battle of egos. And you could tell that Phil wanted no part of it. If you would have just told Phil at the beginning of the season, hey, let's see how this goes, and maybe next year we can address it with Jordan's right. Everybody would have taken, even Scotty. Even Scotty would have taken some coaxing, but even Scotty would have probably come back for one more year, and the last dance actually becomes the second to last dance.
They say that now, okay, but at the time, emotions are high. And there was also a thing, the NBA lockout. You remember, they didn't come back until January. That was the famous offseason of Patrick Union. Oh, yeah, well, we need to make a lot of money because we spend a lot of money. You know, that was that whole negotiation that blew up in the players' faces. But there was something also in there that Michael Jordan needed surgery on his finger because he cut it big time while cutting a cigar. So you don't know if Michael Jordan would have been ready. But the fact that Phil Jackson, you know, they didn't really kind of get it out of Phil Jackson other than, hey, it's my time. Why is it my time? No, he was done working for Jerry Krause, and he could probably see the way the league was going.
Well, think
probably.
About it, Gino. I mean, if you got a GM, Jerry Krause, saying that this is your last season, you could go undefeated, and it will still be your last season. And then after you win the championship, you win the whole damn thing, they go ahead and say, you know what, come back again. That by doing that, Jerry Reinsdorf is really undermining the power and authority of his own general manager. I mean, that's dysfunction within an organization. There's no way Phil Jackson was going to agree to doing that, because he knows by doing that, the animosity that would have created would have just created a deeper rift and more dysfunction within the Bulls front office that he didn't want to have anything, and he didn't want to be a part of a rebuild. I mean, if you would have said, and it wouldn't have been a rebuild maybe in the 1998-99 season, because you would have still had a lot of these guys sticking around on one-year contracts. And I think, honestly, if you're as competitive as Jordan, and I think those guys learned from being around him, that they would have agreed to that one-year deal, you know, at a lesser price, just for the opportunity to go out there and try and win another one.
Yeah, isn't it funny? The handpicked successor, Tim Floyd. Ugh. You say Tim Floyd's named any shit? Yeah. Immediately get that reaction out of you. And, you know, you would think that would have been in the epilogue the next year. The Bulls went, no. I mean, if Jordan has control of what you saw last night, notice that Tim Floyd's name did not come up. Danger, quick story. I remember watching Tim Floyd's introductory press conference, and he gets up there, and he refers to himself in the third person.
Yuck.
Who is Tim Floyd? And like, oh, my gosh. You get the heck out of here. You need to go in and be humble. You're referring to yourself in the third person in your first press conference. What a tool.
Yeah, I catch my little one referring to herself in the third person from time to time, and I always have to remind her, you're not a professional athlete. Let's stop doing that. Because you heard a lot of third-person references throughout the course of this docuseries, did you not, Gino?
Okay. And I heard, you know what else I heard? Michael Jordan took everything personally. I'm hurt. You know, I took it personally. You know, but Russell, I took it personally. You know what? We've been conditioned like, hey, it's business. Don't take it personally. No, Michael Jordan would say, take everything personally. Business, life, it's all personal. Everything. If you want to get better, take everything personally.
That was his fire. It was what made him the competitor that he is. And it was that. It was being slighted. All right, you're Charles Barkley. You just won the MVP. Well, I'm going to win the championship. Congratulations, MVP. Enjoy that trophy. I'm going to enjoy my legacy over here. Or anything that Jerry Krause loved, Jordan would just crush. He would take it. Any Krause dream, as soon as, I mean, whether it's Tony Kukoc or Dan Marley, it didn't matter. If Krause had an opinion on it, Jordan was going to take a leak all over it.
What other team would have the GM and the star player? We're not talking star, mega star. Just hate each other so much. You would think that Kraus would have tried to make amends. Ramona Shelburne had a piece. I didn't know this. And they could have done like a whole nother where the following off season, the story goes like this. Jackson, he didn't get a job right away. He's just taking some time off. Has lunch with Reinsdorf. And it's Jackson that says, hey, you know what? I want to bury the hatchet with Jerry Krause. Reinsdorf says, well, that would be nice. Yeah, I'd like that. We should do that. Let me talk to Jerry. Krause says no. Well, yeah, no hatchet ever got buried because Krause would be gone, unfortunately, a few years after that.
But, yeah.
Phil Jackson tried to be the bigger guy there. So.
And how about Craig Sager? I mean, Craig Sager just repping the media in only the way Craig Sager can by getting Krause to cut a press conference short by saying, hey, with all the backstabbing that's happening within this organization, is it affecting you? Like, Krause just, you know, and my one of my favorite parts, the other media members, way to go. Go, Craig.
But he got the money quote. Okay. Yes. If you're any athlete or coach or GM, notice the mistake that Krause made. He repeated the question. Okay. Well, I don't think there's any backstabbing. Well, that was in the open of every part there. You had the quote of him talking about backstabbing. So.
Oh, so good. Such a good watch. I'm going to miss it. In fact, I'm not going to. I'm going to try to watch it over again, and I'm going through that process right now with the family in tow. My teenager is in. My little one is still a little confused, and my wife, like I said earlier, wants nothing to do with the antics of one Dennis Rodman. I think
you Chicago honk. And jeez, I had to relive the fact that New York never got over. And I'm not we're not alone. Indiana never got over. Utah never got over.
That's right.
I mean, just like all those years. The only team that got by was Orlando, and that deserves a big asterisk because, by the way, they didn't win the championship that year.
Yeah, no, I'm constantly reminded in watching The Last Dance how much I despised John Starks. Through those years. Oh my God. Was there a guy I hated in the NBA more than John Starks? I think not. He just grated on me. Every time those two teams played, I just couldn't stand watching John Starks.
For me, it was Reggie Miller and that 25 points in the fourth quarter and Spike Lee and that whole thing. That was, to me, that gosh, doing the choke sign and everything else. Yeah, but no, that's, you don't get that in today's NBA. I'm sorry. Maybe in sports. Maybe I shouldn't say NBA, but where in sports do you get teams that really hate one another, like the Bulls and the Pistons, or even at the end, the Bulls and Pacers, it was palpable.
Yeah.
You don't get that today.
There's I don't want to say a lack of competitiveness, but it is more of a narcissistic, and this is a society we've created for ourselves, a me first kind of mentality. Now, Jordan had some of that. I'm not naive to think that Jordan was the ultimate team guy. Clearly he wasn't, but I don't want to sound like a boomer here, but it's the participation trophy era that we're kind of getting into here with our kids, where it's like, you just go out there and you do your best. Well, doing your best wasn't enough for Michael Jordan. It's what made him great. It wasn't about just going out there and doing your best. It was out there and winning at all costs. It was all that mattered to that guy all the time. And as we speculated, probably took a pretty big toll on his personal life. I remember being up for a job once and really wanted to get that job, and it would have required me to move and uproot the family. And a friend of mine said, there isn't a single professional success that can overcome a failure at home. And where Michael Jordan might have been the ultimate success story, and I think early in the docuseries they said, you could make the argument Michael Jordan was the best person at his job for any job anywhere at any time. Yeah, you could make that argument, but at what cost? And in this case, it certainly cost him his first marriage.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting how in any walk of life that if you have to have that sort of imbalance that, these things can happen. I mean, right around that same time, Jordan got his divorce. Phil Jackson also went through a divorce at the same time. I mean, pick another athlete. Tiger Woods, obviously, we know about, what happened to him. So, yeah, I mean, we won't want to be these great athletes, but I'm sorry, you know, maybe I just like life on the west side here in Rochester.
Could be a lot worse. Could be a lot worse, Gino. All right, we survive another day. It's the Sports Bar After Hours. We return with a new episode tomorrow. I got to figure out who we're going to talk to. Maybe we'll get a Bills insider or somebody we can talk a little bit more about this Ed Oliver story with. Gino, you return on Wednesday?
We're back Wednesday night, buddy. So
sounds good. Thanks for your time tonight, Gino, and enjoy the rest of your evening. If you're new to the program, you can catch us here at ESPNRochester.com, the radio.com app, and wherever you enjoy listening to podcasts, the Sports Bar After Hours. Thanks for listening and stay healthy.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.